All eyes are on Georgia. Well, for the Masters, that is. And when the Masters come, typically you have Paris-Roubaix. That has not happened this year. Why? Because this is 2020. We just do things different now. Is the CPA, the Writers Union, I think that's what they are. Are they feckless? Do they have any pull? We're going to talk about a few of the issues that they've been involved in lately. Quinn Simmons, his suspension is over just in time for winter. What does that mean for him? Nothing. Some writer signings. Is Chloe Dark the biggest news of them all? Maybe a writer of the week. And Patrick Lefevre is a litigious wanker. We'll talk about him. It is Friday. It is rain. I'm looking outside. It looks like it's raining to me. And with rain comes some winter changes of kit and some things we'll have to go. Maybe we'll do something like that. You know, I got hit up by some cycling magazine to write something for him, and I have no idea what at all to write about. Maybe I'll do something about winter tips. I do have some fantastic tips for the winter riding and how you can get some things that you might want for there. Okay, Mark, we're already joining in here. I appreciate you guys coming in. Tri-Point Circuit Laps, Sunday, 10 a.m. Details on veloking.com. Okay, maybe I'll put that in our description there for anybody that wants to check that out. My fitness is waning, Mark, so I'm on the downtrend for fitness, but maybe those other ones that could use it. And by the way, that's winter riding. You know, it's difficult for many. It's very difficult for me because I don't like to ride indoors. So you have to bundle up a little bit. Here in Northern California, I mean, I'm complaining, this is like first world problems. Bundling up here is nothing like when I lived in Colorado. So good luck to everyone out there that's trying to ride this weekend. Rain, like I said, rain out here. My tip of the day, rain. You're riding rain. Let's say you don't. I'll pull you around. Thanks, Mark. I appreciate that. We do need to get together and ride. Tip of the day, though, if you get your feet wet, let's say you have booties or if you got to put them on, it rains and you ride. Best thing I've done for shoes is you take old newsprint. People used to get newsprint. There's still, you know, stuff comes in the mail. Take newsprint, wad it up. First of all, take your insoles out, wad a bunch of newspaper up there and stuff it in your shoes. It's amazing what it keeps the contour of the shoes. It moisture, all the goes into the paper. You could throw that away and it miraculously dries your shoes. It's kind of a be all end all for that kind of thing. Patrick Lefevre. Look, Dylan Groenewegen, it's just come out that he is going to have this 9-month suspension. I think it's a little severe. But with that, Patrick Lefevre is basically saying, it doesn't matter. We're going to sue him anyway. And I thought we'd talk about the lawsuit that's going to possibly be coming his way. And maybe we can also learn some things about why this is not a good deal. And this comes from an attorney. So keep that in mind about my own perspectives of some of the things that I don't think it bodes well for the future of cycling to do this kind of stuff. Lefevre pushes for safety measures, including sprint judges and danger warning systems. Thought we'd just look at some of this. We don't know when the case will occur, Lefevre said about the upcoming potential. As with most legal matter, it will be something of a longer-term perspective. There could also be a second legal case, with Jakobsen filing one of his own in the Netherlands, reported Hot Laatste Nieuws. Both cases will center on the damages caused by the crash. So I don't know what they're probably going to be shopping for the best jurisdiction for different types of legal scenarios that they want here. I don't feel like talking about it anymore, he said. This Lefevre. Dude, you're the one bringing it up in the news. Lefevre said he accepted the UCI's decision to ban Groenewegen for 9 months, an unprecedented punishment for non-doping offense, but said that he wants to stop talking about the crash. I don't want to talk about it anymore, he said. Not because I'm afraid of the reaction, but simply because it has been enough. As a team, we didn't have any influence on the ban anyway. It's enough. Let's stop talking about it. That's why I'm going to report out here that I'm going to file a lawsuit to make sure that it stays in the news. Douchebag of the century. You know, De Gendt, there was a news story about him, how he said he hasn't been following Lefevre for years. He's like, he's just, it's bad for the mental side. It's bad for cycling. Which I agree. He also went on to say here, at the moment, committees are formed par theme. Okay, he was talking about safety, discuss safety with the UCI announcing tightened safety checks at the end of August. Lefevre is still in favor of independent safety experts, even if UCI President David Lepardin has played down the idea. I think that's something I mentioned that before about going kind of outside of your either the UCI itself using an independent, what they did here with Groenewegen as an example, independent, you know, committee, but even doing that for safety things. I mean, you're talking about the crash once again in Poland. There's going to be some liability spread around. I mean, the organizers, maybe that race itself, maybe the UCI itself. So it'll be interesting to see if the UCI starts thinking about this and there's any kind of comparative fault issue. Because if you start doing that and you're like, well, Groenewegen may have pushed him into the barrier, but for all these other factors, you know, I don't know what they're trying to get out of Groenewegen. What are you really trying to do here? That doesn't really make sense to me why they're going to push, trying to drown this guy out. But it'll be interesting to see if there's any pressure from the UCI going forward with this, if they have any kind of, you know, Lefebvre has some other ideas he wants here about all safety stuff. That's great. I appreciate that. I don't think it's so great coming from him though, because, you know, some of his riders, I mean, you know, Bennett was DQ'd, Alaphilippe in his antics in Liège, and then coming up a few races later when he gets knocked out, you know, hits the motorbike and just, His riders aren't immune to being idiots and to doing dangerous stuff. And what you're going to have here, you're going to start having, anytime there's a wreck, there's going to be a lawsuit. And there is already precedent out there, at least in the States, about issues with your already assumption of the risk. You're playing a game. You know, this is done in hockey. I mean, think about just what happens in we've talked about this here ad nauseum. What happens just in boxing or MMA? These people were acting like that in a bar or anywhere else in society, they would be locked up and thrown away, the key to be thrown away. So, you know, the assumption of the risk, you're doing this because this is part and parcel. And then, you know, if you're wrestling or you're out in the bike, you don't expect to be hit by a car, as happened with the Van Kasselij rider a few years ago, I'm trying to remember, Hoogerland or something like that, where he went into, he got hit by the car in the Tour de France when he's off on the break, and, you know, but there was nothing that really came out of that. Point is, if you start filing lawsuits for every infraction and bike wrecks that happen, you're going to have, pretty soon, it's going to be too expensive to hold races. It's going to be too expensive to have this go on at all, and you're just going to have Sky and Jumbo, like the only teams left in the peloton, and then the sport's going to go away. Because it's going to too litigious, and it's going to just basically sue itself out of existence. At least that's kind of my thought on it, and that's too bad. I don't want to see all these issues come about where you're getting just suing everyone for every little minor wreck, hangnail, what have you. But with that in mind, is the CPA, the Riders Union, are they kind of feckless? I mean, you know, Groenewegen gets us, and the first thing Chris Flower, friend, sent me a text this morning and about this thing, and he's like, hey, is the CPA, are they going to defend Groenewegen? You're like, you know, that's a really good question, because I doubt they're doing much at all to protect his interests and rider's interests when these things come about. This is management basically filing suit against a rider of another team, and then you have, you know, Jakobsen himself going to maybe filing lawsuit against Groenewegen. I don't know, people, it's going to get a little confusing. So is the CPA doing much of anything to really help out those situations? Are they going to take Groenewegen's side? Are they going to try to push for any kind of protections from him? I don't think so. You're not going to see any, you know, start having a lawsuit. Just as a sprinter, is this what you want to have happen? You want to have De Koyne Quickstep, one of the best sprinting teams, out there filing lawsuits against other sprinters' teams for, you know, the crash. You're going to start seeing lawsuits against De Koyne. They have bigger pockets, and maybe you're going to see, you know, someone goes down. Now you start to sue for, okay, damages of getting wrecked, possibly missed out endorsement sponsorships, prize money, possible contracts for not winning a race. Good job, Lefebvre. Congratulations on that. Anyway, CPA, they've done that. It was also interesting to see there's a new article here about the riders' funds. So evidently the CPA has an issue where you retire, and upon retirement, you're supposed to be able to get funds for kind of having some longevity, or the gap between the time you're done racing and kind of going back into normal society. And with that, they are... they're supposed to be able to pay out some funds, and the CPA, basically, they released something indicating that they're not able to do that. So let's see if we can pull this up here and share it here. I didn't really know that this was an issue. I didn't know that the CPA was actually involved in kind of the writers' funds. You know, they had an issue where your bank guarantees with the UCI, and if your team doesn't get it, they had a little issue with those going out and not going out in time, but the future payments based on available funds collected via a percentage of prize money. So they're taking all this, typical union, they're taking all taking all this prize money, they're collecting it for their whatever reason the CPA is having, and then they're supposed to be able to actually issue those funds out for these guys. It was created in 2001. The transition fund is supposed to assist riders as a switch from the world of professional cycling to other careers. The UCI initially managed the fund itself, but transferred responsibility to the CPA in 2012. Interesting. The fund receives its income from a 5% levy on race prize money. Now, let's be honest, that's not huge. You know, that what's always, I mentioned at the start here about the this time of year, well, not this time of year, but when you see the Masters Championship happen, you typically see Paris-Roubaix, and then there's always that inevitable comparison of the winner of the Masters compared to prize money compared to the winner of Paris-Roubaix, and it's paltry, right, in comparison. So the prize money for cycling is not exceptional, even on, hey, you know, we get we get handed out some Clif Bars and some other things here locally. But in the pros, they do get actual prize money. I don't believe that they're just necessarily getting swag. So you're not getting a lot of info or a lot of money to really pound the CPA's coffers with that. But one key problem with the fund is that it relies on the presumption that race organizers will be forthcoming with their prize money. I do have a quick anecdote on there. We did the Tour Langkawi, I don't know when it was, back in the 90s. And there was a team did really good, had the yellow jersey for a while. Chad Gerlach was in the lead there, and I'm not sure if there was any stage wins. And point is, they're supposed to pay out the prize money, and it was pretty significant. And of course, how teams were back in the day, pretty light on being able to get your sponsored money. So you're like, oh, we got this money coming here. It's going to float the business while, and instead of the sponsorship money. Well, it didn't come. And then there was a thing with, as you can imagine, changing currencies around the world. I don't know what they have there in Langkawi, but it was basically, you know, the point is it didn't come until the riders were complaining. And next thing you know, I think that's kind of where the bank guarantee situation came about. So yeah, that's a problem. The prize money takes a long time sometimes to actually be in fruition. And I don't know if they're allowing, if they're saying you have to have the funded amount of prize money before they're even putting on the race, but I doubt that's the case. The dates back to the period the UCI managed the fund, with the bad debts initially being underwritten by the UCI in the first 5 years of the fund. In recent years, the UCI has been working with the CPA to rectify this issue and collect all monies due from race organizers. However, the CPA have listed the globalization sport as one of the reasons newer racers haven't been able to rely when it comes to forwarding prize money to the fund. The CPA also states that in some circumstances, prize money has been paid directly to riders rather than the fund. And I know these riders are definitely paying their dues. I'm sure that when they get the check themselves, you know, is it Happy Gilmore where they get the big giant check? I don't know. I doubt they're taking their cut from that and paying it out to the fund. So it looks like to me that they're kind of, the fund itself is blaming some of the, not be able to pay any of the riders. Okay, at one point, the document states that whether retired riders would be entitled to €12,500, with the CPA adding that it being understood that the CPA steering committee will determine in advance the amounts of payments pending on the available funds in accordance with the distribution criteria set out. So the riders are supposed to be getting some money. They're not getting it. It's kind of a problem. Then I thought we would maybe venture in, and this is going to be a little bit more difficult for me to really exploit here, but I thought I would give it a shot as far as being able to play a little bit of this video. And this goes to the issue, the riders, stage 10 of the Vuelta. There was stage 11 was actually the protest. But stage 10, what happened was there was time gap at the finish. It was supposed to be a note if you had over 3 seconds, because it was going to be a sprint stage, and it'd be a tad bit of a climb. Primoz Roglic gets the win. He has a little bit of a gap to everyone else. And with that gap to everyone else, he gets a 3 second and moves into the lead. teams didn't like it, specifically Froome and Ineos, and even the Jumbo team was like, oh, there's going to be, and there's a video of the Jumbo team post tour, and well, they came out with it from the Vuelta, and it's a little bit interesting. We can get some highlights here and see if I can play those so that everyone can kind of get a listen to them. And it's a little bit different from what the rider statement coming out. And the statement first said that, oh, everyone's in agreement. And with that, not quite as what it seemed like.
Guillaume Martin of Cofidis jumps away now.
Guillaume, don't go too early yourself. Eh?
Roglic now kicks, looking for the hat trick of wins. Primoz Roglic looking for another 10 second time bonus, and it's gonna be on the line, a hat trick.
Yes! Primoz wins again. Primoz wins. Fucking won the bunch, sprint. Very good, boys. Super, super, super.
Woo! Super happy. Never easy to win, but again, I had legs and really, really nice.
Okay, so there you go. Primoz gets the win. He gets a little bit of a celebration. And then I thought we would try to get, this is kind of the part that's a little bit more interesting here, about the next day at the start. And with Froome, you can see Froome starting to trying to put on his little stamp on the race as far as being the new boss in town. And is he useful as the boss in town? Let's see if we can show that one as well. Hang on just one moment. Okay, so as we remember, Lance Armstrong was kind of the patron, right, of the peloton. And with that, he kind of learned how to control everybody. And you can see Froome kind of trying to do the same thing here. And let's hang on one moment. Sorry, I told you this was going to be just a little bit more difficult. Oh, by the way, this is a really good video if you ever get a chance to watch it. They're warming up for the race.
Oh, no. Oh, don't do that now. Give me the opportunity to have the stage, and I talk to the commissaris on behalf of you.
No.
Froome's yelling at people, no.
You create a commission, and we talk about it. Honestly.
CPA gaat nu een protest indienen. Hè, dat alle ploegen zeggen van we snappen er niks van de uitslagen.
We changed the jersey now for yesterday because it changed the race. If we start and Jumbo have the jersey, they need control. If we start and we have the jersey, we need control.
Hey guys, you should be here 5 minutes from the neutral start.
Okay, a little bit interesting there. As you can see, Chris Froome is trying to control the situation. And with that, you also see that that the riders did not really care to do that. And you saw Cofidis, and I think Movistar both kind of just leaving the gate early and not really caring about what was going on. What's most interesting, and I don't know if maybe we'll just play the audio portion of this one, is after the race, talking to Primoz and his reaction to what went on there. And his reaction to what went on there is about maybe what you would expect. And see if we can get past the ad, and then we'll play this portion as well. Primoz doesn't appear to have been technology notified of
it's
the conflict.
Always watching that, us, studying
or the protest
move
itself.
...as it was given to Primoz Roglic. The guys in here think that Richard Carapaz should still have been wearing that red jersey today.
For me, it was also new. No one said nothing, huh? And no. Just suddenly they did it. Froome. So
they changed yesterday the 3 second rule to normal 1 second rule because it was not a flat finish. Yeah. And that's correct. But you have to communicate it before.
Because I'm not the guy that I would say, okay, this is right, this is right.
Yeah.
I don't know if you heard that well enough in there. He said he's not the guy that's going to say this is right, this is right. Primoz Roglic didn't sound like he was really involved in there, and there was only one news source that I actually saw. So the thing that came out itself from the CPA was that the riders were all in the announcement that the riders were all in conjunction here. They were all in the same mode, and that they were all for this. Although Cycling News did say Carapaz's Ineos teammate Chris Froome led the protest to complain over the shift from the published rules that designated the stage as an expected bunch sprint, which would have meant that the gap would be only 1 second and Carapaz still in red. The peloton was not unanimous in its decision to protest, however, with Cofidis Solutions credit Guillaume Martin rolling off the start line and Movistar following. And there was something else earlier this year where they're kind of protesting, I think, some bad roads they had in the race. It was perfectly fine. But what you saw here and kind of can hear that is they didn't even, sounds like they didn't talk to Roglic about it. It's what's interesting. If you watch the Chris Froome, he's like, no, don't roll off the front. And he looks back at the camera pans back and Roglic is kind of standing there and like rolling the eyes. And then Chris Froome says, hey, we don't want to go because we're not going to talk about this after the race, because what if we need to change the jersey and put it on my teammate instead? And then that's when they pan back again and Roglic is just kind of like, what are you doing? First of all, protest right after the race and do that the official way. And if that doesn't work out, I get that you're doing a protest here, but you're not going to change the jersey. And this goes to kind of the UCI. It was a weird thing where they changed the rules midstream. We don't see those kind of things in our politics or anything, but sorry, is that a political statement? But in this case, the CPA, really, they don't have much pull, and that's kind of where the story is going here. So you see some of these incidences, and once again, I think the CPA, there's a good ideas behind it, but you just get some situations like this. Groenewegen, I don't think they're going to step in and actually protect riders from these kind of things, because who's going to be filing these lawsuits? It's going to be team managers, big pockets like that are going to be going after these small riders. And then is it really a team against team in a lawsuit? It's really odd. CPA is not there to defend the riders. They're not getting their pay when they're retiring. They're not getting funds. This is a mess starting from the UCI down. And I just don't think it's going to get any better. Speaking of additional messes, Quinn Simmons, his suspension has been lifted. This is per Cycling News, and a bunch of other websites have reported that. They talked to him. I guess they gave him the cultural talking to that he needed. He maybe had some classes. He's out there in Durango trying to get fit for the winter. Not a big deal on the suspension, if you really think about it, as far as from a riding perspective, because I don't know what race he was planning on doing Paris-Roubaix, and it was probably going to be a big race for him as far as, learning. Paris-Roubaix didn't happen. So from Quinn Simmons' point of view, first of all, get a little better on social media. Just back off and all this other stuff, and just kind of focus on the usual bike stuff. Don't try to be the next Phil Guymon. Dear God, please don't. All right. Some rider signings. This is going to be a quick one, hopefully, today. Chloe Dygert, she's gone to Canyon SRAM. Kind of a big move. I didn't see that coming. She'd been in 2020. I know she'd really been, maybe she'd been focused on just doing, stuff for the Olympics, World Championships. 2020 really allowed her to do that. She didn't have to do any big races. Canyon SRAM's probably going to have her do a little bit more of that, assuming her comeback is going to be okay. Alex Dalsett, he extends with Israel Startup Nation for 2 more years. I guess he's going to be going for the world hour record. Camp on Earth's current record holder, I think right now, says that he thinks that he can make it. So Dalsett gets 2 years. Look, he won a stage in the Giro this year, and with that kind of lifted his profile a little bit up. I hope we see something from Will Barta soon, that he gets a contract. That was a pretty big deal, what he did in the Vuelta, coming just short, in 1 second short of the win with Primoz Roglic. Once again, Roglic was on another plane than everyone that day, and obviously a very good time trialer. So very impressive to see Will Barta keep doing his praises, shouting those out. Speaking of someone I shout out the praises for all the time, TJ Van Garderen, he's to stay with EF. He posted this on his Instagram. Thrilled to announce I will be riding with EF Pro Cycling for 2021 season. Van Garderen wrote on Instagram on Tuesday, going on season 12. We get a lot of exciting things to look forward to. Let's get it. 12 seasons? Has he been pro for 12 seasons, or is he just racing for 12 seasons? He's only, I want to say, like early 30s, 32 maybe. 31, so he's pretty young. I mean, he could definitely, you know, if you look at the Valverde, Chris Horner model, he's got another 12 seasons in him. So that'd be good for that. Okay, we got comments here. Brian Zimney, by the way, did a ride last week, just tooling around, took a right-hand corner, and all of a sudden this dude comes flying by. It's Brian Zimney. Good to see you out there, Brian. Quinn Simmons should take a lesson from the movie Bull Durham when talking to the media. I'm just happy to be here. I'm taking it all one day at a time. Good Lord willing, things will work out. I agree. Decent movie. You know, Susan Sarandon, Kevin Costner, and what was the big lug in that movie? Maybe someone can bring that one up. Yeah. Any good cycling movies out there? Like I said, I just played some clips here of the Jumbo. It's on YouTube. I'll put a link to that. I suggest taking a look at it. It's pretty good. One thing I learned from there, well, I learned a bunch of things when we talk about a few of them here. One of the interesting parts is I had made critiques and criticisms last week of EF and that Hugh Carthy, you know, Mike Woods goes out at what, stage 14, he's going for the win, gets beat by Willens in the line. And I'm like, that's going to come back to maybe bite them. And that's what I said. I said, stage 17, he wasn't there when Hugh Carthy might have needed him. And maybe you can play some different tactics where Carthy can go from longer range out. What I learned from the EF, from the Jumbo little 48 minute film there is that Woods crashed before the final climb. So once again, I don't know if that's due to his descending skills, but it looked like that's possibly why he wasn't up there to help, which means why wasn't TJ or someone else up there to help him, Hugh Carthy, that is. Anyway, that's if talking about films, check that out. I do think it's a worthwhile little thing to check out. Mailbag and stuff, we haven't really had much people posting in on our YouTube. So if you want to make any comments on that, like I said, we try to put your comments up here when you're doing. Mark Tucker, once again, he's got his Tri-Point Circuit laps Sunday, 10 a.m. Details on VeloKings.com. Check that out. That's for some local riding. You know, I think we're having the World River Ride World Championships coming up. That's usually the Thanksgiving weekend. It's the Saturday of the Thanksgiving weekend. That's River Ride out there by the river, Sacramento, the famous River Ride. It's been going on since the 70s. So check that out. We have Coffee Republic in the Folsom area. I'm sure you've got some good rides out there where you are. Bay Area, there's always good ones. The Ride of the Week, I didn't do this one last week, but I'm giving it to Will Barta. And for the week before, Ride of the Month, maybe we'll do that. Someone, dear God, get him a contract. Brian Zimney chimes in with one other useless statistic. Thanks. All three Grand Tours were won on rim brake bikes. You know, it's a really good point. I saw this. Maybe I could pull it up on a text I had. It's probably not because easily to find. But Cervelo is bikes are going to be going to Jumbo. So the Bianchis from Jumbo are going maybe to Sunweb. Mitchelton Scott's losing the Scott portion. And they're getting, so there's a whole different bike combo. And I don't remember, but we'll try to break that down for who had what for where. I wrote this to Chris a while back, and now I don't remember what it was. But you had, I guess the Bianchi is a little bit of a heavy bike. So Jumbo is getting Cervelo. That's kind of the whole deal with their new bikes. So congrats to them. That's all we have for today, folks. Anything coming up in the world of cycling? I don't know. Who's going to win the Masters? DJ, maybe Woods, do a back-to-back for him. Any of these other? How about an old guy? How about a Sandy Lyle, a former winner out there? I think I saw him wearing suspenders today. Not a great look as you get older. So useless statistic. I do like that all three Grand Tours were won on rim brakes. You know, the way that the state of technology is and the way that we get journalism with tech today, it's an amazing feat that someone was able to stay upright and win on a rimless system. I think that's why Jumbo, once again, going to Cervelo, and I heard that according to Chris, the Bianchi bikes are kind of a tank. That's why they were going rimless just to the rim brakes. One on rim brakes, yeah. That's why they're going to rim brakes, is to kind of lighten up the bikes. I don't know if that's true, but that's what we have. I hope everyone out there enjoys the week. Some weather, some bad weather, some good weather. I don't know. Either way, keep it safe. Maybe give me your plans on what you're going to do in the winter, and if there's any good, and who's you're going to win the River Ride World Championships. Any guesses on that? Jeff Watson coming back from retirement for that one? Maybe, maybe so. Either way, everyone, take care.